Wouldn't it be great if three idiots picked apart each episode of your favorite podcast?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if we discussed the newest episode, ongoing theories, and predictions for what comes next?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if they didn't ruin the podcast at all and kept everything spoiler-free?
We don't do that. You've been warned.
Welcome to We Do That, a Taz Fancast. I'm your co-host, Chris.
And I'm your other co-host, Colin.
And I'm Colin.
This week's episode, Amnesty, episode 23.
So guys, the Oscars were this week. Should we talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I could just, I don't know a lot about it. I'm happy about all the Black Panther wins. And that Black Klansman won. Apparently there's sort of a to-do about Green Book, but I need to read a little bit more Twitter before getting into it.
That's good. You always want to be up to date on the Twitter before
gotta get the Twitter
and lay down some knowledge.
I will say, sort of like self-reflection, I went to bed at 8:15 because I was tired yesterday, so I didn't really catch a lot of sort of the Oscars itself. But I'm told that there were good snacks in my house. That I didn't have.
Oh, that is unfortunate. I'm sorry you missed that.
Yep.
I was awake during the entire Oscar ceremony, but I was not watching.
It's good. Mm-hmm. So basically, you watched it though.
Mm-hmm. I'm currently on my first watch through of The Office, so I did that.
Oh, first watch through ever?
Yeah.
Kind of missed that boat by like a decade or so.
Well, you know, yeah.
I mean, good. Glad you made it. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome to the team.
So anyway, on this week's episode of The Adventure Zone, the heroes are in a morgue. They fight a Bigfoot-ish monster. The Ned gets snatched away into some hollow deck. Space time pocket thing in a hotel or something, and then the other guys have a run in with the sheriff, and that's it. Mostly,
I really appreciate your ability to undersell what was a jam packed like. Things happened all of this episode.
System. I think the first thing I want to touch on is Duck uses Beacon to trip up the monster, this light monster, which because of the revelations of last week, we now realize that every time he takes out Beacon, he's undoing his belt. So,
but he has suspenders, so don't worry.
Yeah, but that means that everyone needs to go back and revise their fan art.
Right.
And it's canonical, and it's all wrong.
I'm envisioning Griffin going like, all right, Justin, what do you do? And Justin goes, I take off my belt. Whoa!
Ka-chow.
Ka-chow!
Yeah. That adds like a different energy to a sort of a lot of the scenes.
100%.
In this arc.
100%, it just changed. When I realized that and thought of that, this episode, it changed how I see Duck forever. It's like, oh, God, a monster, and he starts undoing his belt.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't intimidate the monster, then he's got a sword, so. So, I mean, it's a good strategy.
Is it?
It's a strategy, for sure. I have... more questions this episode than I think I've had in a while, but all of my questions sort of come about the last 10 minutes or so about the episode. Does anyone have any earlier revelations they want to dig through?
Well, I also have things to talk about, like questions that I want to ask about Ned's adventures. So why don't we start there?
Yeah. Okay. So
he's definitely in Amnesty Lodge in the future.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that's true because I think because I had that inclination at first, but I realized that there's no reason that Griffin – I feel like Griffin would have made the logical leap that Ned, the character, would have recognized amnesty in any form and then like even if he was out of time with when amnesty was, he would know what it was. Also, I mean, the conference room doesn't exist in our current version of Amnesty Lodge.
Well, and I think that's part of it. Like, it could be the past. It could be the future.
But I think that it's not. Like, if it's the building that Amnesty Lodge is in, which has since been renovated into Amnesty Lodge, I do not think that it counts as being Amnesty Lodge, maybe?
Unless there is something like a significant about that. Thing. Well, I mean, right. Like, the hot springs are there. Like, so there is something about that area that is significant still.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, and, I mean, this was all spun off of Griffin popping in to say, hey, we don't know what time it is. Because otherwise it would have just been a weird place. But
right. Well, he said he didn't know how much time has elapsed.
Yeah, I didn't take that to mean like they leapt far into the future or into the past, but just that it could be 45 minutes later, it could be 3 hours later.
Yeah. But I what struck me most is like I can't imagine what a scenario in which the root of the monster, like the where the monsters are coming from, the bomb home area would be analogous to Earth, I guess.
Well, and so I read it a little differently. The story that I'm making up in my head. We had a weird reality bending tree. And so for me, if this four-armed being of light can move through space and time, that what if this was a way to move into the past and disrupt Amnesty, like at the Lodge, from being a place that could protect sylphs and eventually, I mean, we're talking going back to kill John Connor here, like, you know.
Right, but so, if that was the outlook, then that would be the focus of their operations. I feel like the place that Ned currently is feels like a intersection of different rifts, not like the place where they're focusing the energy, but more as a way station to get to other places. Like if they were trying, if the place that Ned is Amnesty and that is important to the story, I think they would be whatever these creatures are. And I'm running onto the assumption that there are multiples of them, but I guess that may not be true. But based on the way Griffin narrated the end of it, I'm running on the assumption that there's more than one. That like they seem to be just moving between that, using that as to get place to get between stuff. So maybe it is out of time, but as a way station. I'm almost wondering if it's like I don't know if anyone has seen The Langoliers. Mm-hmm. It's a weird. It's a movie that really fucked me up when I saw it as a kid, and I now realize that it is trash. But it's like the world continues to exist when time leaves it, and everything kind of goes stale, and then it gets consumed by these characters called the Langoliers, and they kind of look like evil Pac-Man, just chomp, 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 chomp. But that is the impression I got when I first got there. It's like it's a place that time has moved on from, but maybe that leaves it vacant for this other creature to sort of take it over and use it to poke holes in time to get to where and when it needs to be. But I still don't fully understand what's happening.
And you know what? I actually really, like, I feel like this is enough of a mystery to be able to not understand what's happening, right? This isn't, oh, hey, I've thrown you 12 new threads that we're going to eventually explore. Like, this is a decent-sized mystery for an arc.
Yeah.
So I'm going to shock you by disagreeing.
Disagreeing? What?
No,
totally novel thing. First time on the podcast ever disagreeing.
I wish I had my disagreement soundboard.
one thing. Two things.
Toronto!
I just listened to this week's Mavin Bam. It's back. It's good. It's very good.
I guess two things. If he can, if this is a portal, and he can go when and where he wants, and the light person being is changing the world or whatever, then I think this whole arc, this whole campaign, is going to end with our three heroes in a bar in Phandalin. And it will connect Amnesty and Balance in a way that nobody wants.
Yeah, I really don't want that to happen. I really don't want that to happen.
And yeah, yep, gonna happen. Second thing is, after Balance and after all that, I am this whole like rift in space-time, and I'm just sort of tired of this genre of mystery. Yeah, this trope, this sci-fi, it's I can't really discern whether it's sci-fi or fantasy or some combination thereof, but it's okay. So you take him to like the holodeck of the Enterprise or whatever, and I don't know, it's just not that interesting to me. I'm kind of tired of these other interdimensional beings that can leap from one space-time to another.
I think the trick of it too is that as happened in Balance, we're suddenly having to keep track of multiple planets,
mm-hmm,
of a sort, and then also now possibly multiple times.
Yeah.
Which just is such an extra layer of complication to what could just be a straightforward monster hunt.
Yeah, and it goes back to something I've said certainly multiple times. But like, I want the party to be together, and I just want them to make a comedic podcast.
Yeah, which they were heading for sure this time.
Yeah, yeah. And
they also, I'll get there in a second.
Well, I was just going to say, the past several weeks have been there, right? Yeah. They've been, and so I don't like splitting the party. I thought their fight against the monster had some really great moments.
Well, some wonderful moments.
Well, and I mean, I think that part of what I loved about that was, I feel like they actually played the game this week. Like, they made checks and they did skill rolls, and you know, it really felt a lot more like, you know, there was some interaction to the story going on.
Clint executed a perfect bluff roll on a monster, which it says in the rules cannot be bluffed. And I think that was like the encompassment of Taz as an art form. Like, yes, you have done supremely well by chance of luck at a thing that you can't actually do. So let's figure out what it means.
Then all the butt stuff.
a lot of butt stuff was good.
Well, the one thing that, and that we've talked about this before, is I still don't know if they're supposed to be making checks that often under this system. Or there were at times during that fight where it felt a little granular and they were trying to pick a check that would work as opposed to, you know, kick some ass or act under pressure or whatever. Or is it supposed to be a more general thing where you can do the stuff you can do, but it's supposed to be a more general idea of how you're performing in that time and space?
I do think my understanding of still haven't read the rules, but I've read,
of course,
kind of like around the rules through some other forums and things. And it seems like what they should be striving for is just telling their story. And then the DM would step in, or the gamekeeper would step in and apply a check when it is relevant to the action someone states that they want to do. So like when Ned says like, when he's in the room and he says, I'm going to open the door, but I'm not going to go out. I just want to peek around the corners, and I'm looking around the corner. That is a moment to stop it and say, yeah, you're going to try to read a bad situation. Like, that I think is the embodiment of how those checks are supposed to work. The three player characters should just be telling the story of what actions they're taking and sort of playing this out. And the gamekeeper should just layer the system on top of that, which I think they did relatively well. But there are moments where I think they're the player characters are getting too focused on doing a check. And I also think a part of it might be Justin still learning the skills of playing this new archetype. And so he's more explicitly stating, I'm using this ability. And since Griffin doesn't know that archetype as well yet, like, he has to call it out rather than it just sort of flowing through naturally.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes sense. And you know, I wasn't trying to levy a criticism, but just something that it felt like that during.
Doesn't sound like you.
Well, like, it just felt like they were making a lot of checks, and I wasn't sure. And you know, if that's really the way the game's meant to be played or not really.
Yeah, I would guess. My feeling is that when they're in combat, I think there probably should be a lot of checks, because the game is not meant to be combat focused. So you should be trying to get kind of out of it. But it was it. I think it was nice for me to have a lot of dice action this time.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
Let that drive some storytelling opportunities. I want to keep talking about Ned's sort of adventure, though.
What, the part where he was in a computer?
Yeah, so that...
the part where Ryan Gosling was driving a computer?
Okay, yeah, so those two things... I want to tackle those two things in the order in which Jake read my mind. So he was in a technological simulation, which feels very out of line with the non-technological presentations of the bomb-bombs that we've had previously. Which, does that mean that all of this points to a higher power that's controlling them and is more technologically sophisticated? Or has, like, or have we done three hunts where they sort of got their feet under and now we're heading down the rails of Griffin's story that he actually wrote, where there's some sort of shady organization and we sort of need to take those as two different entities?
I see it as alluding to one, like, shared consciousness mastermind that's sort of controlling or pervasive throughout all the bomb-bombs. Not saying I like it, but saying that that's what I got out of that sequence.
But especially the level of technology seems strange. Like, I would buy that if it was done in a fantasy sense, but as a sci- like, that line between fantasy and sci-fi, if we were doing it as a fantasy, monsters, magic, telepathy, something, 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 I would buy sooner than technology being involved.
Isn't that what they say about, you know, magic or whatever? It's just technology so advanced we can't understand it.
Yes.
Maybe that's all any fantasy is. Midichlorians.
Yeah, it's definitely about the midichlorians, for sure, for sure, for sure, for sure. I don't know. I just that felt out of sync with the world they were building for me. The whole, like, techno hyper VR space was not, just didn't read right to the
way. It did feel a little weird. But I did super appreciate Clint's, like, willingness to just drive into that, you know, and try to call up a light cycle,
because
that's exactly where my brain went. I was like, okay, I guess if we're in a weird cyberspace,
if we're going to play in this space, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So what is the deal with Ryan Gosling being there?
Well, that's why I think it's like a shared consciousness. And that the like words or the aspect of humanity that it has learned in this shared consciousness is pizza and duck.
And that is, like, the extent of it?
That it knows how to express in words.
Well, but why would it have told him to run?
Because it only knows three words.
But but him telling Ned to run would seem to indicate, like, a division from whatever put him in the system to begin with, right? Like, if there is a shared consciousness, you'd think they'd be of shared purpose. So this would suggest that there is a divisive, you know, element within that space.
Okay. So now we have some segment, because they treated Ryan Gosling the way they did.
What's the goat's real name? Like Eric Billy. Or something?
Billy.
Duh. That's, of course it's Billy.
Because they treated him so well, he is trying to preserve them. Not necessarily humanity, but just those he considers his friends.
But Billy... Wait a minute. Where's Billy? Did he go off with Indrid? No.
No, he's at the Cryptonomica.
He's at the Cryptonomica, but also at wherever Ned is.
Well, shared consciousness.
Shared consciousness.
He's got a transmitter in his brain. Man, you can't prove me wrong, Jake.
But see, so shared transmitter, I guess what I don't want is I don't want them to science this thing. Like, well, I don't want to science their way out of this thing.
Also, like, if there's a transmitter, we're in this, like, dead zone. Like,
right.
Like, we have established this whole thing as a non-science.
Oh, maybe that's the thing, because it's the National Quiet Zone, the big antenna. Maybe it's picking up signals from the planet where What's-Her-Face was, Minerva was, and then, I don't know, there's a bigger theory here, but maybe that's it. Maybe that's it.
Or, yeah.
Everybody write the middle bit where I make a profound statement about a theory, and that's the thing that I'm saying.
Well, and so the idea there is that because of this dead zone, there is some...
Oh, fuck, new theory! Ha! Go ahead, Jack. Okay,
go.
Government conspiracy, which is why Agent Stern is there.
Oh, right. Man, it took you a long time to get there.
Yeah, so anyway, that's my new theory.
I can dig it.
You were probably making a point that I should let you finish.
No, I was trying to work my way around the fact that there's something buried underground, like that whatever the abomination, like the root of this thing is under Kepler, you know. And so the dead zone is, you know, because of that to some degree.
I thought like a defensive maneuver or something.
Yeah, or to, yeah.
I always interpreted the dead zone, aside from a useful narrative device, to be like, you know, like the government prohibiting cell towers to go up.
Yeah, voluntary, but...
Well, enforced, but yeah, the humanitarily voluntary.
Yeah, like not the things don't actually work. They're just were never put up there.
Right, but then again, if things don't work, I always pretend like I meant for them not to work. You know, it's not a bug, it's a feature. Maybe those satellite dishes don't do anything. They're just there for show.
And, yeah, there's something here. It might take me a minute to find it. Because then, so, I mean, ultimately this drives at, like, what is the big bad for this arc? Like, what are they gonna have to figure out?
Well, maybe the satellites aren't receiving, or the big antennae aren't receiving, but transmitting.
Out to another planet?
The bomb-bombs.
Right. But where are they? Where are they on another planet? Are they in another dimension?
No, they're in the gate thing.
So through the portal to Sylvain.
But they're not in Sylvain, they're just in the portal.
That portal goes through a multiples of space times and arrives at where the bomb-bombs come from.
You're right, they're somewhere in between.
In between, yeah.
Okay, but then what? That doesn't drive us to like what the motivation is of the antagonist. Like, why do they exist? What are they going to have to figure out to end Amnesty? How does Amnesty end? Is I guess what I'm driving at.
Well, Colin started that. You know, it ends with the three ending up in a bar in Fandolin.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but like the good version of it. What's the version I want to have happen?
They end up on the moon base.
They end up defeating Gundren.
Right.
They are Gundren. They know that the only way to make this happen is that they have to get the party to follow that whole path. And so they kill Gundren Rockseeker, and Ned Chicane becomes Gundren Rockseeker.
And Duck becomes Barry Blue Jeans.
And Aubrey leaves.
Aubrey is the Rockseeker that was killed in Wave Echo Cave with the jumping boots that they steal.
Wait. What? No. What? None of that. None of that makes any sense.
I guess, no, Aubrey becomes Lucretia.
That makes more sense.
No, but does it? Because Lucretia already existed.
One of them can't become Barry Blue Jeans because he has to exist way before that.
He has a point there, Colin.
Does he?
Yes.
He is a lick. Lich. Lich.
He is a lick.
But not, no, but no, he not at the start. We know where he comes from. He's not a lich to start with.
By the time they get to Phandalin, he is.
Yeah, but I know you didn't like the Stolen Century, but it does exist as canon. You have to, like, it still exists.
I mean, I think that's up for debate.
No, it isn't. No, what? I'll debate anything, but no, that's the show. That's, you maybe found my arguing octave.
excuse me. I'm back now. Nice.
Yeah. Love podcasts.
This is Chris's normal voice.
Hey, everybody.
This is what I sound like when I'm not doing radio.
Can I, just to circle back on something we haven't been discussing at all. In the morgue place, after the fight, the demon...
You know, they have a word for a morgue place.
The morguary. So, in the morguary,
Morgararium.
Let me make sure I understand this. The monster has disappeared with Ned.
Yes.
Duck and Aubrey are in there.
No.
With the body. In the
lobby.
Well, no.
At the beginning, yeah. Duck
yeah,
just
yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Immediately after the fight.
Yeah.
They're in there.
In the operating room.
In the morguary. With the dead Hornet guy and then dead Gregor Mortis.
Yes.
And then they take so long to do anything that the sheriff walks in.
Yep.
And, like, the morgue attendant is laying there dead.
Yep.
And he doesn't, like, at least cuff him?
Nah.
Like...
They're the heroes.
This sheriff's department is terrible.
I mean, you've met Deputy Dewey, right?
No, I'm talking about the sheriff. I think they're both grossly incompetent. I think somebody else needs to run for sheriff of this town. Because
if they hear this, it's going to be Ned. Ned's going to run for sheriff.
I know, and I love it. I can't wait.
Or this is how the male woman, Janice, comes back in.
Oh,
she
boy.
She reappears as a sheriff candidate.
Yeah.
I'm for that.
Yeah. Janice for sheriff all the way.
You know Janice is probably like the mastermind of this whole thing.
Oh, it's absolutely. Just so strange to have her as a named character, which we all kind of latched onto and then have never seen her again.
Also how Pigeon.
How do you think Pigeon's also doing? Pigeon.
I assume she's dead.
I've been assuming that for like 27 episodes.
We've only had 23. We established this earlier.
I know, but that's how long I've been.
Four episodes earlier than she existed, I wanted her to be gone.
That's right.
Hey, is Deputy Dewey dead?
I don't think not, so. But, no, so that's going to be, I can predict that.
You can predict anything, man.
Well, yeah. Oh, okay, fine. I postulate.
Nah, we stopped doing that a couple episodes ago.
But no, I think what's going to happen is...
We stopped doing that a long time ago, too.
Can I just say my thing, please?
Nah, dog.
Travis is going to get a mixed success, and he's going to have to make a hard choice. And he's either going to have to... He's going to be able to save Deputy Dewey, but it's going to be still flashier. Like, it will be obvious that... Aubrey has done magic to save him, or he can choose not to save him to try to keep what cover is going.
I mean, yeah.
Is that a hard choice?
I think it could be a hard choice that Griffin would say. I mean, but I think Jake's assessment is right about how that's going to play out.
Well, I do think it's a hard choice in Griffin's mind.
Right, we've talked about this.
Is it a hard choice?
Well, I think Griffin did kind of lead into, like, the cat's kind of out of the bag with this whole scenario, is I think what he's heading towards, and he wants them to then have to deal with that.
Well, but you can deal with the fact that there is other shit going on that can be different than, oh, also I can do magic.
Yeah, I'm a wizard. You're a wizard, Audrey.
Yeah, but I mean, Aubrey. At some point,
getting my Hagrid voice ready.
At some point,
can that be a new podcast voice?
Wouldn't that be appropriate? Like, okay, so you're just a teenager or early 20s person without any powers, and you're doing this shit. Like, are you dumb? You've got Bigfoot that's not doing anything. It's like, of course she has powers. Otherwise, there's no way she'd be involved. I mean, Doug's got his belt.
I mean, I guess I see the case you're making, but I think if you were building the world, like, it would be easy to put the park ranger in a place where he might be at the scenes of some shit. And we all know Ned has, like, a shady-ish history, so maybe he's up to something. And then the weird teen from out of town could kind of fit into that.
Yeah, but
mold,
they,
maybe? No, not really.
They already have...
Losing it.
They already have enough of a reputation that when two guys were killed at a bar on the outskirts of town, the first place they went the next morning was to Amnesty Lodge.
Yeah, okay. I'll get you that.
It's... Like, they have to know something. I don't feel like, to me, that would even be that hard of a choice because, okay, everybody else seems to know I have magic. Honestly, I think fewer people know about Beacon than about Aubrey's powers.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really talked about the ramifications of the whole Pizza Hut sign incident, which I imagine would have been pretty public depending on how things shook out. But I think what they're heading towards is a larger showdown where we're going to have three groups, sort of like the Pine Guard and the Amnesty Lodge in one corner of our triangle, the Hornets in another corner, who have bought into the supernatural but are also anti-Amnesty Lodge trying to do anything about it, and then the Sheriff's Office and sort of the town normies who do not want to believe that something strange has happened, though they are aware that something strange has happened, but are also just sort of skeptical of everything and don't trust anyone and want to try to put a logical face on the whole thing.
So is this the part of the movie, the proverbial movie, where you just like start scratching your head and like just tell each other the shit?
Yeah, it's when the dramatic irony gets kind of old.
Yeah, like you don't have to tell them about all the people at Amnesty Lodge or whatever, but just tell them the stuff.
What I said last week, and Colin disagreed with me.
I think I would have been fine telling the Hornets. I mean, I don't know what I said 2 weeks ago because I don't listen.
You disagreed. I was right.
Jake, I disagree.
Right, and you were wrong. I was right, and you were wrong.
I mean,
That's not how the song works.
Yeah.
The song is meant to be penance.
Neither of us are right or wrong yet.
We're just friends.
I'm just saying.
Sort of different state of being.
I don't know. This is all. You know, I think you're right in that we're going to have these three different factions. I don't think it would be particularly interesting unless Amnesty Lodge, all the sylphs come out to play with it. Like Bigfoot Barclay rolls up as Bigfoot for some climactic fight, and you know, the other people come out as whatever they are. You know, Jake Kulis comes out as a werewolf.
I think the only way that happens, and I think this would be awesome, but I don't know if it's going to happen, is if the Hornets get very involved in this supernatural world they don't fully understand and come under the control of whatever this other being or power is, and are suddenly on the bad side of the story. And then I think we end up at a very epic battle between the Pine Guard and the Hornets, where all of the magical friends...
I would... Now, have you seen Anchorman?
Yeah.
Because I sort of want... rival
news anchors?
Yes, I want that rival news anchors with, like...
That's Anchorman 2, but yeah.
Oh, my bad.
It's in both of them.
Yeah, that's what I thought. There was the Trident in Anchorman 1.
Yeah, there was the Trident in Anchorman 1. And then there were, like... 20 news teams in Anchorman 2.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of.
But, like, I want all of them.
Minotaur.
The
Will Smith
Amnesty
is there.
Lodge, the Hornets, and the police department to all come up to, like, an abandoned parking lot and just duke it out.
There's a chance we're heading towards the end of, like, the Blues Brothers. Which yes. I would be very, very into.
Agreed. Well, I mean, they are going to Chicago.
They are going to Chicago, or trying to avoid Chicago, depending on what Chicago is to you. I don't know. So I guess I'm really excited about what's happening. I think the biggest thing that I'm struggling with is I do not understand what the ultimate problem to solve is going to be. Like it feels discordant with the things they've had to fight and the mysteries I've had to solve, that it isn't leading me towards a singular solution, especially in this wider world that Griffin is building, that, like, there's one big mind-controlling monster, or there's evil forces in Sylvain, or there's evil forces in Kepler, or another thing. Like, there's so many things going on, I can't really find a good arc to finish it, and that makes me a little bit worried about how the series is going to wrap up, if they're going to have to hit, like, a rush point where, like, I have some serious storytelling to tell to make this make any sense.
Oh, yeah. Like, remember when there was a stolen century?
Yes, exactly.
I don't. Did that happen? Was that a thing?
No.
Good. I totally agree. I think there are almost too many mysteries and too many threads going on right now for me to be super vested in a lot of them, to where I prefer these episodes where the boys just hang out and have fun, like last week.
I also think there could have been a version of this podcast where they skipped the water monster and had, like, some initial fight with the bear that was maybe a little bit shorter, and then went bear, tree, this one at a much faster pace, and it would have made a lot more sense.
Do you think the water monster introduced that much discord into
I think what he's saying is it just took time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, except for the fact that there is this, you know, now glowing white light that is the common thread, evidently.
Yeah. It introduces it introduced Pigeon to the Pine Guard, and that has been hugely consequential. Oh, no, wait, my bad. No.
It also introduced apparently 24-hour rule to getting in the hot tub, which has never come up again.
It also introduced the just ridiculous amount of water parks in this, you know, mile radius.
Yeah. I guess not if you to mention, use your phone, water parks are the next best thing.
Not to mention water parks that are open in late October.
Yeah.
In West Virginia.
I mean, it could get hot sometimes when the leaves are changing.
I'm just saying. Look.
Yeah. It's just also a ski resort, as they pointed out.
Okay, so maybe they should have skipped the water monster.
I feel like this hunt feels good, and I wish we got here faster.
I agree.
I think there's a lot of nonsense before that at the current time, I don't think I need to know. And if I need to know it later, I'm going to be kind of annoyed at the way it was presented.
Well, I think not to prolong the point, but it served as escalating the monsters. Because you had something that was essentially a feral animal to moving right. to something that was basically an elemental that could move thing to something that could move time to this thing, which can, you know, create portals and move through them and is ephemeral or corporeal, depending on what he wants to be.
Yeah.
Like, so it's, I think it only serves a point to be that gradual escalation of monsters.
And I think it certainly makes sense as those stepping stones. Maybe it's just sort of the pacing of all.
Yeah,
of
that. I think that gets back to some of the other points that I've sort of been feeling is I don't know how well this system works for long, term storytelling.
Yeah, especially because they like one of the things is when you fail, you mark experience, and when you have so much experience, you level up. But they haven't been doing that.
Ned mentioned marketing experience in the podcast.
Yes, they mention it like once an episode.
But they level up at the end of the hunt.
Yeah.
And leveling up consists of getting some new shit from new Garfield. Yeah, not Garfield. Not new Garfield.
Heathcliff.
So, like, it's... Like, what's... Besides saying you failed, what's the point?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, the success of these last three episodes and how excited I am about finishing this hunt and learning and now learning more about the world has just made me frustrated by the things that have been introduced as seemingly important that have now been backburnered. And I mean, we'll see what their relevance is later on, but it just feels disconnect, like Thacker, who we haven't heard about in a month and a half. Or 2 months of, you know, our time now. And then, like, all sorts of shit in Sylvain that's going on. And weird speaker, interpreter lady who is now gone. Like, they focused in on this hunt and the process of this hunt and fighting the monster. And I think that has been really good, and I'm really enjoying it. But it just shows that all of this other stuff in the world is maybe not necessary. Which just makes me frustrated that it existed.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you focus on the core things, other things will come out of it. But if you just focus on the hunt, you'll get a good story.
Right. And I think that goes to letting them then build the world, not sort of having it built for them to exist in.
Yeah, I would. I absolutely agree with that.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of this discussion. I feel like if we can take an hour-long podcast and just sort of focus on the last 15 minutes or so, that's pretty good. I think it means it's a good-ass episode.
I agree.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us for another week of Amnesty Discussion. We are so glad to be able to share our thoughts and theories with you, and we are so grateful for those of you who send in suggestions and thoughts on Twitter @WeDoThat_pod or via email @WeDoThatPod@gmail.com. It's so great to hear what you are also loving this new hunt. We have a long list of thank yous to actually get to, so I'm going to bring out my list real quick, and I'm just going to go through. We want to thank our producers, our mixing engineers, our recording engineers, our office designers, also our seating specialists as well. Okay, fine. Thank you to The Early for our intro and outro music. We'll see you again in 2 weeks for more Amnesty. Bye, everybody.